It's half past eight.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Every week at this time, Lucky Strike stages an informal quiz party with you as the quizzers and four walking encyclopedias as the quizzees. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of duplication, Information Please uses the question that was received first, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, we repeat, as always, that Information Please is a completely unrehearsed and spontaneous program. And this evening, our board consists of the famous duo, John Kieran, sports expert and author of a recent book entitled John Kieran's Nature Notes, Franklin P. Adams, light verse writer and conductor of the Conning Tower in the New York Post, together with our two guests, John Gunther, the world-famous foreign correspondent and political authority who has just returned from an extended trip to South America, and Lyman Bryson, conductor of the People's Platform and professor of adult education at Columbia University. Now remember, for each question that's missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now suppose we start this evening with a question coming to us from Mrs. Jessie Stockbridge of College Park, Georgia. Get two out of three, gentlemen, if you can. You all know the disease, gentlemen, known as the gimmies. Can you identify the following give-me's of song or poetry? The first was the give-me of a famous American patriot and statesman, Mr. Adams.
Liberty or death?
Yes, that's being very stenographic. Give us the whole sentence.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me...
Now you're all right.
Give me liberty or give me death?
Yes, that's very good. Thank you, Mr. Adams. And that was said by whom?
Patrick W.
Yes.
Henry.
And could you... Patrick, well, did he have a middle name?
Well, he ought to.
Hereafter, it's Patrick W. Henry. More for the schoolboys to memorize. And when was this said, Mr. Adams?
I think at the Continental Convention.
Well, give me a date. Mr. Kieran.
Oh, I think it was said at a meeting in Virginia.
I believe it was.
It was a Virginia gathering for delegates.
That's right.
And
what year was it, Mr. Kieran? Remember?
I'd say it was around 1774.
I think it was 75. Now, how about the next give me? This is the give me of an early American builder of small boats. An early American builder of small boats. I get a blank look. Mr. Kieran, no.
Give me of thy bark, O birch tree.
That's right.
Ayahuasca.
Very good. Very good. from Hiawatha. That's a tricky one. Now, the following give me was that of a bike-riding suitor. A bike-riding suitor. Is the question clear? A bike-riding suitor would be a suitor that rode a bike. Mr. Adams.
Your answer, true.
Very good. It's from what, Mr. Adams?
Daisy Bell.
Daisy, from a bicycle built for two. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. Gentlemen, I think that's very good. Sends us on to the next question, coming to us from C. Newman Degler of Newark, New Jersey. Again, get two out of three if you can. I'm going to read three very famous statements. Give me the source. Here's
another
the first. No, this one has no give me's in it, Mr. Adams. You want to rest? Quote, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. The source, Mr. Gunther?
It's Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence.
In the Declaration of Independence, yes. Well, that's a very easy one to start us off with. Here's the next. Man is born free, and everywhere he is in chains. Mr. Bryson.
Rousseau.
Nope. What were you going to say, Mr. Gunther?
Karl Marx. It's from the Communist Manifesto, isn't it?
No. How does it... No, I don't think so.
In the Communist Manifesto in spirit, but Marx took it from Rousseau.
Oh, the plagiarist. It's from what... I will, Mr. Gunther, in a minute. But from what book of Rousseau's is it?
It's not an essay on inequality.
I think it's from The Social Contract.
Well, it's...
Is that the same? It isn't the same.
No, it's not the same. I think that's wrong, but...
Who is?
I think it's from the essay on social inequality.
Well, now we'll look it up after the class is over.
Anyway, it's from Rousseau.
It's from Rousseau.
And he won a prize on both essays, so it didn't make any difference to him.
Well, now you still think it's from Karl Marx, do you, Mr. Gunther?
Well, I know I'm wrong.
No, I think not. Man is born free and everywhere he is in chains is the first line, I believe, of the social contract. Now, the next quotation. These are the times that try men's souls. Now, we have several hands here. Mr. Adams?
Thomas Paine.
Thomas Paine, what book? Mr. Kieran.
I think it's The Rights of Man, isn't it?
No.
Mr. Bryson.
The American Crisis.
Yes, The Crisis by Thomas Paine. These are the times that try men's souls. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3 on that. Gentlemen, you're too good this evening. How about this one? I think I'll make you get all on this. This comes from Sidney J. White of Buffalo. Distinguish among these diplomatic agents. An ambassador, a minister, a consul. The difference. Mr. Gunther.
Well, an ambassador is the highest ranking officer that a government sends abroad, and he represents the head of the state from which he comes.
Is that why Mr. Roosevelt is entitled to say, my ambassador, as he has in the past?
I'm not quite sure.
That's
Adams?
That's quite correct.
But an ambassador of the United States abroad represents Mr. Roosevelt.
That's right.
Not the government of the United States. He represents the government of the United States, too.
Absolutely correct. Now, how about a minister?
A minister represents the government of the United States abroad, but not the person of the head of state. And it's the immediately subordinate rank to that of ambassador.
Well,
he lives in a legation, whereas an ambassador is in an embassy.
Are there some countries to which we send a minister but not an ambassador, Mr. Gunther?
Oh, a great many.
Countries of less importance.
Well, Bolivia, for instance.
Hope you have no Bolivians listening into you.
The small Central American states and some of the small European states before unfortunate things began happening to them.
Good enough. Well, that gives us the difference between an ambassador and a minister. Now, how about a consul?
Well, a consul,
Mr. Gunther,
is in a slightly different category, although now our foreign services have merged. A consul, historically and primarily, was to tend to business, shipping, and other routine matters. He was not ever empowered to negotiate. He was not a plenipotentiary.
He wasn't accredited to the head of the government to which he was sent then. Well, and mainly, wasn't his job to look after his co-nationals in the country to which he was sent.
When they got thrown in jail and so on.
Yes. That gives us an ambassador, a minister, and a consul, and still no stickers tonight. How about this one? From S. Omar Barker of Tecolotenos, New Mexico. And if I'm mispronouncing that word, I hope that all the Tecolotenoses of New Mexico will forgive me. Now, get 2 out of 3 if you can. Quote one line or more from a well-known poem or song in which these words occur. The words are somewhat related in meaning. Moaning, whining, gurgling. Mr. Kieran.
And may there be no moaning of the bar when I put out to sea.
Yes.
Let there be.
You know, Mr. Adams, I think Mr. Kieran's right this time. I think it's May.
Is it?
I think so, Mr. Adams. Not sure, but I think it's May, as Mr. Kieran said. That is from what poem?
Tennyson's Crossing the Bar.
Yes. Think of any others. Well, how about whining? Mr. Kieran again.
The schoolboy with shining... No, that's
whining morning face?
That's right.
I think you've...
Sometimes.
You've got your quotation a little garbled, Mr. Adams. You're on the right track, Mr. Adams. Mr.
The whining schoolboy
with
shining morning face, creeping like a snail unwillingly to school.
Yes, those are very good lines, and they come from what play?
They come from...
As you like it. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Mr. Kieran, as you like it. Very good. Well, we've got moaning and whining. Now, how about gurgling? Gurgling. This is the hard one. I don't suppose I'm more...
Well, there's gurgling water under a brook somewhere.
There no doubt is, but I don't think you'd get away with it, Mr. Gunther. You don't say that with the positiveness that Mr. Adams does when he makes up something like that. Mr. Bryson.
I can tell you where to find it, but I can't quote the line.
Where would you find
it? It's in Southey's How the Waters Came
That's
Down at
right.
the
Hall.
Lador.
I think it's Lador, Mr. Adams. You're right this time, by golly.
That's right.
Very good. I don't know whether there's a gurgling in that or not. Are you sure,
is.
Mr. Bryson?
Yes, I'm sure.
I can think of a...
All possible words that have to do with water.
Most of them are, but I'm not sure that gurgling is there.
I don't think gurgling is there because it doesn't rhyme with anything.
It's in the middle of a sentence.
Ah, Mr. Adams, what would gurgling rhyme with?
Burgling.
And, Mr. Adams, can you help us out now?
Well, the waters don't come down burgling.
They certainly don't. But I can think of some lines from the Pirates of Penzance in which there are gurgling.
You love to hear the little brook of gurgling.
That's the one.
Listen to the merry village chime.
Yes. I thought I detected a little note of melody there at the end, Mr. Adams. Now, that's the one I was thinking of. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3 at least. and the extra one I think I hinted to Mr. Adams. Now, the next one is from Barbara Griffin of Springfield, Massachusetts. Again, I think you should get all on these, gentlemen. I'm going to name three groups of events. Identify the presidents during whose administrations they occurred. Now, here is the first group, and all these things occurred during a specific administration. Which one? Tunney beat Dempsey, Queen Marie of Romania visited the United States, and the first Soviet five-year plan, remember, was initiated. Mr. Gunther.
Calvin Coolidge.
Calvin Coolidge, that's quite right. Mr. Kieran had his hand up and was about to say, Mr. Kieran.
Same thing.
Very good. Here is another. Babe Ruth pitched against Brooklyn in the World Series. The women's suffrage amendment was adopted. John Barrymore starred in Tolstoy's play Redemption. Whose administration? Mr. Kieran.
That was the first administration of President Wilson.
That's quite right. Woodrow Wilson is very... That's quite right. Very good, Mr. Kieran. Now, how about this one? The first complete wireless message was sent across the Atlantic. The New York Giants refused to play a World Series. The Russo-Japanese War began, and Oscar Levant was born. I don't think I've got these in the order of their importance.
That's a fine anti-climax.
Well, I have... I have two hands, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Gunther. Want to split it between you?
Well, I'll give it to John.
I think it's William Hart Taft.
No.
Jeez, you should have had Mr. Kieran take. Mr. Bryson.
Roosevelt.
Which one?
The first.
That's the boy. A lot of presence of mind there, Mr. Bryson. Yes, Theodore Roosevelt. That's quite right. I don't know how old that makes Mr. Levant. I guess Mr. Levant must have been born around 1905. Mr. Kieran, why did the New York Giants refuse to play a World Series?
It was in 1903. They thought the winners of the new American League were just Johnny-come-latelys, and they couldn't be bothered with them.
Snobs. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. You're a little too quick on that one, Mr. Gunther.
I guess I will.
How about this? This comes from Mrs. Florine P. Stratton of Essex, Connecticut. Get 2 out of 3 on this. This is a question about sailors. What sailor, gentlemen, had insomnia? What sailor had insomnia? Mr. Kieran?
The Ancient Mariner.
The Ancient Mariner. Could you prove it, Mr. Kieran?
Well, he couldn't sleep. I mean, he... I've forgotten the exact
one. Mr. Gunther?
Captain Horatio Hornblower had insomnia on some pages of those Forrester books.
Yes.
So
and the readers, too, yes. Well, to give you the documentation on this, Mr. Kieran, 7 days, 7 nights, I saw that curse, and yet I could not die. Do you remember that? It's when all the sailors fell down dead, and couldn't sleep with a horrible sight. What sailor liked cheese? What sailor liked cheese? Probably only one sailor, Mr. Kieran.
I think it was Ben Gunn.
Who is Ben Gunn?
He's in Treasure Island.
That's right. I think that's pretty good. I don't suppose there's another sailor in all literature who liked cheese. Ben Gunn in Treasure Island. How do you happen to remember that, Mr. Kieran?
Well, that's the first thing he asked for, I think, when the hero of Treasure Island came upon him. Right. Asked him, did he have a little bit of cheese?
A little bit of cheese. Yeah. Very pathetic.
Nowadays, he'd ask for a lucky.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. What sailor never used bad language? Mr. Adams.
Captain Corcoran.
Captain Corcoran. Where do you find Captain Corcoran?
In HMS Pinafore.
In HMS Pinafore. And can you prove that Captain Corcoran never used bad language?
Hardly ever.
Well, hardly ever. Bad language or abuse, I never, never use, and so forth. Now, so far, Lucky Strike, which is very lucky indeed this evening, announces a loss of no dollars and no sets of the Britannica. And now here's the very consistent Mr. Cross.
It's easy to be consistent, Mr. Fadiman, when I talk about Lucky's, because Lucky Strike consistently pays higher prices and gets the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos at market after market. One of these markets is Huntington, West Virginia, where, during the past season, the American Tobacco Company paid 30% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 30% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. Other markets are Knoxville, Tennessee, where American paid 35% more. New Tazewell, Tennessee, where American paid 37% more. And Western Missouri, where American paid 41% more.
And so it goes at market after market all over the South. No wonder with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Have you tried a Lucky lately?
Mr. Cross, your brevity is equally consistent. You said your say in exactly 59 seconds. Well, see if you can get all on this, gentlemen. This comes from Mrs. N. Rudin of New York City. What was the occasion which inspired these phrases recently seen in the news? There are three. Here's the first. Quote, found her soul, close quote. Found her soul. Mr. Bryson.
Churchill said that in a speech about the Yugoslav people.
Yes, yes, a very telling phrase. He said that Yugoslavia, when she took her stand against the Axis powers, had found her soul. Quote, full neutrality and understanding, close quote. Who said that apropos of what? Full neutrality and understanding. This, again, is recent, I should think, during the last week. How about a guess? Mr. Adams.
President of the United States.
No, it's a fair guess, but that would be wrong. Mr. Gunther.
I think it's the interchange of notes between the United States and the German government on...
No, it is not, Mr. Gunther. Mr. Bryson?
I'll make a guess that it was Prince Paul.
No, we've guessed practically everybody. Mr.
Oh, Gunther? Yes, now I do know. I think it's the new Yugoslav Prime Minister, Simović, who said after repudiating the treaty with the Axis that his predecessor had made that Yugoslavia would now start a policy of complete true neutrality.
That's a beautiful explanation. It's wrong. It certainly sounds convincing. Mr. Kieran. You had your hand up. You're the only one that hasn't said his say so far.
Well, I was going in on Yugoslavia and Turkey and... be wrong beyond that.
You'd be half wrong. It was Russia's statement of her policy with respect to Turkey. Full neutrality and understanding. Russia's statement with respect to Turkey. Well, you're not more than about 800 miles away, Mr. Gunther.
But you didn't say full understanding before.
Oh,
you?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Yes,
sure.
I think I did. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Now, the next and last phrase is very simple. Well done. Well done.
No.
Mr. Bryson?
Well, that's been said so many times by so many people.
It has. That's quite true. It was said very recently.
Mr. Goldenpaul said it this evening. I heard
it. It was said very recently about a very important action. Very important historically. Very important in the course of the war. Gentlemen, Admiral Cunningham of the English fleet said it to the fleet after its engagement with the Italians in the Ionian Sea. After the Italian fleet had been pretty well demolished, he sent one of his brief English statements ending with, well done. Well, that gives us, only gives us one out of three. That will send $25 instead of the Britannica to Mrs. Rudin. Now, gentlemen, the next one's much easier. You can rest on this one. It comes from S.H. Seskin of Newark, New Jersey. Name four literary characters who are famous because they slept. Famous for sleeping. Mr. Kieran, will you start us off?
Rip Van Winkle and the Sleeping Beauty.
Rip Van Winkle and the Sleeping Beauty. Yes, that gives us two. You meant them as separate characters, of course, I hope, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Bryson.
The Dormouse.
The Dormouse, yes, and Alice in Wonderland. That's a very good one, Mr. Bryson. Mr. Adams.
I'll give you a lot more.
All right.
Seven Sleepers of Ephesus.
That's right. That gives us ten. That's each. Seven Sleepers of Ephesus in the old story. Then there's the hare in the Aesop's fable, the hare and the tortoise, who slept for a short while. There's a Shakespearean character, Mr. Kieran, who's famous for doing a little sleeping. Mr. Gunther?
Lady Macbeth.
Lady Macbeth in the famous sleepwalking scene. Very good.
And she didn't sleep.
Well, she slept.
Macbeth did murder sleep.
She slept and talked at the same time. Don't you remember, Mr. Adams? Can you give me a character in Pickwick Papers who's famous for sleeping? Mr. Kieran.
The fat boy.
Yes, the fat boy is always falling asleep. Well, that gives us, with Mr. Adams a seven, about 15. Paul V. Guy of Washington, D.C. sends this one in. It's a four-part question. Get three out of four if you can. Now, these names that I'm now going to mention achieved unusual fame as a result of their association with another more famous person. Who is or was the more famous person? The first is George Chapman. Mr. Kieran.
John Keats.
Now, will you explain your answer?
Why, Keats wrote that famous sonnet on first looking into Chapman's Homer.
Yes. Who was Chapman, Mr. Kieran?
Well, he was a historian and a poet Well, he was a good while before Keats, by the way.
Oh, yes, I think you know.
I think he was in Shakespearean
times. Yes, he was, exactly. And he was a translator of,
that's right,
of Homer.
Of the Iliad.
And we remember him...
Because he said, until Chapman spoke out loud and bold.
Very good.
And so on.
It's the 14 lines then of Keats that has made Chapman more famous than his sole translation of the Iliad. Now, the next person achieved fame... as a result of association with whom? The person is Gridley. Gridley? We have several hands up here. Mr. Gunther.
You may fire when ready, Gridley.
Very good. Who said so?
Admiral Dewey.
Admiral
at
Dewey.
The Battle of Manila Bay.
Battle of Manila Bay, what year?
Oh, about
1898, May 1st.
It was May 1st, Mr. Admiral. Very good.
On the bridge of the USS Olympia.
Gosh, you do
in
know
the Spanish-American War.
Now, the third... the third name... is Mortimer Snerd. Mortimer Snerd. Mr. Bryson, our adult education expert.
I suppose he's associated with Charlie McCarthy. He's
yes.
a more famous character.
Yes, he's a character on the Charlie McCarthy program invented by Mr. Edgar Bergen. Did you know that, Mr. Adams?
No.
Don't listen to your competitors?
I don't listen to the radio at all.
Well, you know, Charlie McCarthy is very good. Funnier than we are. How about... Thomas Hardy, and I don't mean the writer. I don't mean the writer, gentlemen. Mr. Bryson again.
Isn't that the Hardy that Nelson asked to kiss him as he was dying?
Yes. At what on what famous occasion?
The Battle of Trafalgar.
Yeah, Battle of Trafalgar. What were the exact words?
Kiss me, Hardy.
Kiss me, Hardy.
That's right. Thank you, gentlemen. That gives us 4 out of 4. He's associated with Lord
Easiest
Nelson.
Easiest way to say it, after all.
Well, as Lord Nelson lay dying. Now the next one, gentlemen, comes from Lillian Decker of Hollywood, California. Yet 2 out of 3. What might have been the grievance of these people? In the first case, the grievance of a man named Vasco Núñez de Balboa against Mr. Kieran's friend John Keats. So we have several hands. Mr. Adams.
It was Balboa who discovered the Pacific.
Yes.
And Stout Cortez.
Yes, who said it was Stout Cortez?
The Darien man.
There you are, local pride again. Stout Cortez was given credit by Keats for discovering the Pacific, and of course it was really Balboa. Now, what grievance might Christopher Columbus have had against a man named Martin Waldseemüller? Martin Waldseemüller. Hard one, by golly. I think we got him stuck. Christopher Columbus is very easy.
No, the other name.
Waldseemüller is spelled W-A-L-D.
Oh, I know.
All right, Mr. Kieran.
Why, he was a map maker, I believe, and he gave the name of this country to America after Vespucci instead of giving it to Columbus, who really was the first one to...
That is the complete and total story. Very good, Mr. Kieran. Thank you very much.
I'm surprised he said map maker. I suppose he meant cartographer.
John Fitch might have had a grievance against Robert Fulton. Why? John Fitch against Robert Fulton. Mr. Kieran again, huh?
Why, Fitch was a little ahead of Fulton in experiments with steamboats.
I think more than that.
He may have taken out a patent or something, but, I mean, that's his grievance. He thinks that Fulton got all the credit for inventing the steamboat.
Well, actually, according to many historians, Fitch really invented the steamboat, and Fulton was the man who did the exploitation and, as you say, got the patent. In other words, we say Robert Fulton invented the steamboat, and we should say John Fitch. We never do.
May I say at the same time before the letters come in that it was 1904, not 1903, that the Giants refused to play the American.
You mean to say you've been worrying about that all this time?
That's right, yes. When they first played him in 1905.
In that case, I think I'll give you a sports question, Mr. Kieran. Maybe we can get you on an error on this one. From Richard E. Kinsman of Elmira, New York. Get 2 out of 3. What game begins when the referee throws an object vertically in the air? What game? Mr. Bryson.
Basketball.
Basketball.
What game begins when the ball is thrown into a group of players? Mr. Kieran.
I think the rugby begins that way. I'm not sure.
You have me there. I don't know. There's a game we play over here, though.
Polo. Polo. It does over here.
Yes, and water polo.
Yes, that's right.
What game begins with the ball being bounced before being put into play? Mr. Adams.
It might be table tennis.
Yes, it might be table tennis. What were you going to say, Mr. Kieran?
Same thing.
Yes, table tennis it is. How about this one from Mrs. Beatrice Mayer of Brooklyn? Identify the greedy person or miser who did the following things. In the first case, he was accused of a robbery he did not commit and later robbed of his own hoardings. Who was that? He was accused of a robbery he didn't commit and later robbed of his own store of gold. Well, the answer, gentlemen, is Silas... Yes.
Silas Marner?
Very good, Mr. Bryson, Mr. Kieran. Thank you. Which one feigned deadly sickness in order to attract gifts from friends and followers until his servant double-crossed him? Mr. Kieran.
I think that was in Aesop's Fables, the lion, wasn't it?
I don't remember that. I was thinking of a play by an Elizabethan.
Molière's. Did Molière's miser have that experience?
No. We've named two misers, but I think the proper answer is Ben Jonson's character. Any of you remember who that was now? Volpone. Now, that gives us one wrong. How about this one? What greedy person was punished for his greed by being unable to eat a square meal? Mr. Adams.
King Midas.
King Midas. What happened to him?
Oh, everything he touched turned to gold.
Everything he touched turned to gold, yes. That's quite right. I think that's all we're going to have time for, gentlemen. That gives us 3 out of 3 and very well answered this evening. And now Mr. Cross explains why he can say so much so quickly.
Well, smokers, I need only quote a few tobacco market reports to give you an accurate picture of what happens all over tobacco land. That's because at every one of the 119 markets that handle 96% of all the cigarette tobaccos sold at auction in this country, Lucky Strike pays higher prices for tobacco. As you recall, American paid 30% more than the market average in Huntington, West Virginia, 35% more in Knoxville, Tennessee, 37% more in New Tazewell, Tennessee, and more in Western Missouri. These markets are typical. Just how typical is shown by the smoking preference of the independent tobacco land. They see Lucky's pay higher prices and get the finer, the later, the naturally milder tobaccos. And they smoke Lucky's by an overwhelming majority. Yes, with independent experts, buyers, warehouse men, and auctioneers, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cross. Now, tonight, Lucky Strike, which has had a very successful evening, seems to have paid out only $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, very largely due to the expert answering of Mr. Bryson and Mr. Gunther, whom we thank for coming to Lucky Strike's party this evening. Now, next week, our well-known terrific trio, Oscar Levant, John Kieran, and Franklin P. Adams, will be in there punching as usual. And as our guest, we announce an actor familiar to us on stage and screen, the star of the current play now running on Broadway, The Tally Method, Mr. Philip Merivale. Now, remember, all those who are listening, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets the sum of $10. And if the question should happen to stump our experts, which happens more than once, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the latest edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Please remember to send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. Listen to a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, the famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Lucky's pay higher prices for the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, warehouse men, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.